Hello?
Hello.
Daniel, this is Joanne.
Hi, Joanne. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm good.
Are you rushed? Do you need more time?
Nope. I'm good.
Oh, good. Good. Quiet time for you, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, the boy is finally in bed. It's the only quiet time there is.
Yeah, and I suppose from what I'm hearing with other friends, you're out east, right?
Yeah, we're in Queens.
Yeah. You're just exhausted by the end of the day. Your mind shuts down, I guess.
Yeah, we're actually very lucky. You know, it's not easy, but my wife works from home kind of anyway, so that adjustment for her wasn't so bad. And I'm kind of used to breaking up my day however I need to. But, you know, a lot of it's falling on me to take care of him.
Well, it's so hard, and all of the stuff on the computer gets boring after a while.
Yeah, no,
they don't have their friends. It's got to be really difficult.
It's pretty tedious. He's handling it okay. I mean, you know, we have our ups and downs, but I think we're better off than a lot of people.
How old is he?
He's 9.
Yeah. Oh, that's so hard. Well, I feel for you.
Yeah. I think it would be harder if he was younger. You need a lot more attention. You know, he can do stuff on his own. And it might even be harder if he was older, and, you know, like a teenager that really, really needed to get out.
Yeah, sure.
So, you know, it may be okay.
Where's your studio?
Normally, it's in Williamsburg off of the Bedford stop. You're familiar with New York, I think.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. So the Bedford stop and the L, we're 8 stops out on the L. So I usually just jump on the train. I'm there in 15 minutes. But I've been working from home. I have a table here I can work on. It's not so bad.
I guess you're lucky in that score too, because your work allows you to work in
a
different kind of space more easily. Yeah.
Right. I'm set up to work here. You know, I usually work here at night anyway.
I see.
An hour or two after he's asleep. So, where are you?
Well, you know, I was living in New York,
but
I've long had a home in Colorado.
Whereabouts?
And in Vail Valley.
Oh, nice. Very nice.
And 2 years ago, I decided to make this my main residence.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of eased into it, and then I just sold my apartment in New York. I keep a small office, and the archives for the collection are in New York, and the collection's there, of course. But I'm living in Colorado full-time now.
Oh.
And that was a good decision. I'm happy.
How long
I get to New York when I need to be.
Yeah, right. How long ago did you make the move?
I think it's going on I'm probably approaching almost 3 years now.
Okay, so not that
But
long.
I did it over a period of...
Right.
I made the transition over a period of about 10 years. You know, I've always lived in urban areas, and I love New York, but my circumstances changed, and I just wanted to spend more time here in the mountains. And it was hard at first, but it's working quite well now.
Yeah.
I was thinking today about the first time I saw one of your drawings. I have a really good recall for when I saw a drawing and the circumstances, where and how I felt. Mm-hmm. It was at PS1.
Oh, yeah.
There was some kind of show, yeah.
Yeah.
And that was the first time I'd ever seen one of your drawings.
Uh-huh.
And, I was very moved by it and then went on the hunt.
Okay.
So I'm really happy to have you in the collection.
That was 2005, I believe.
Sounds about right.
Yeah.
So I'm really happy to have the work. And sorry that we've never met.
Right.
But maybe that'll change one day.
Yeah, one day New York will open up again. We'll be able to talk to each other in person.
Yeah, right. But I thank you for making time to speak with me tonight.
And, my pleasure.
You know, I was really forlorn when all of this, I had actually been in New York in March, when all
March.
Of this seemed to happen on a dime, turn on a dime.
Yeah, it really did.
And I just couldn't deal with art at the time.
Yeah.
You know, it was the Armory. I just couldn't look. I didn't want to go to shows, and I had all these plans.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, about 6 months into, 6 weeks into this, and just staying away from it. I thought it's exactly what I need.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
I thought I needed to get more involved. So we talked about these recordings as something that would really be important in our archives for,
mm-hmm.
for graduate students. So I'm happy to have your voice anyway. Tell me, I'd like to know when and how art entered your life.
Oh, as far back as I can remember, I guess. I mean, I was the kid who was always drawing wherever. all through school, I never thought of it as anything but kind of doodling, I guess. You know, I could sit for hours and draw on a sketchbook or whatever, but I also would kind of scribble in the margins of my notebooks during class whenever I wasn't really engaged in whatever the subject matter was. I guess the time came to graduate high school. I didn't take any actual art classes in school. And when I graduated high school, it was go to college, I guess. So that was what I fell back on. I said the only thing I really, really love is to draw. And so I enrolled at University of Connecticut because it was close enough and cheap enough. And they put me in the fine arts department and stuck me in the graphic design zone with a pretty heavy graphic design program. So
were there any artists in your family?
No. No, my father's a physicist, and my mom did a
uh-huh.
bunch of different things. So,
okay.
Yeah, the science was in there. But
did you frequent art museums? Were you exposed to art museums?
Not a whole lot, no. Mm-hmm. I was outside of New Haven, Connecticut. So we had Yale. We had the Yale British Museum and
mm-hmm.
Yale Art Galleries down there, but it wasn't really my thing to be looking at much. I was pretty interested in a lot of other imagery, you know, when I started, taking science classes. I really, I liked that as a sort of a broad subject. I wasn't that interested in the nitty-gritty of it, but I really liked the kind of broader strokes of how things were all related to each other. Up till college, I never thought of art as a career or anything. It was just sort of...
It was just part of your life, I guess.
Thing
the drawing.
I did. Yeah.
Yeah. And drawing was there from the beginning and persisted.
Yeah. Yeah, the drawing was always there. And it's funny because as a student, in graphic design, this was right before computers kind of took over the commercial art world there. So everything was kind of hand-done, tracing letters on a piece of graph. But because it was a fine arts school that, you had your foundation as well. So I took a basic drawing and basic sculpture and all this. And that grabbed me a little more. I had never taken a formal drawing class, so it was really interesting to sort of start from square one as learning to draw that way. It's pretty interesting. But the graphic design kind of was more the focus for those first 2 years, and I kind of lost it a little bit. So I actually took a year off, and I went and lived in Steamboat Springs, believe it or not.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Great. I took a year off and worked in the kitchen, skied every day pretty much, and decided that probably was not going to go too far for me. So I went back to school, and...
Got to get that out of your system.
Yeah, it was good. I recommend it for all students. But I had had a sculpture teacher that I, one of my last semesters before I took the year off, and I really kind of took to that. So when I came back, I decided to major in sculpture, of all things. And I was pretty into that for the last two and a half years while I was finishing my degree. So I got my degree in sculpture, my BSA.
What were your materials?
I was doing some modeling with clay, mm-hmm. and then I was building things, and eventually I was casting. I did a whole bunch of casting, and then I was building armatures out of different kinds of metal and creating these cavities out of fabric that was woven into these metal structures, and then I pour concrete or plaster into these kind of, I guess they were bags that were kind of strung into these structures. So I did a body of work right after school and used that to apply to grad school. I went to UMass Amherst for sculpture and sort of migrated from there back to the drawing. By the end of my degree there, I was pretty much more interested in drawing again.
Was there a relationship between the sculpture and the drawing?
There's yes and no. I started to draw very sculptural forms, but the sculpture I was doing was not necessarily that closely related to those drawings.
Mm-hmm.
There were some that were, and there were some that weren't. And the drawing sort of went off on its own. And then I moved to New York after grad school and lived under the Manhattan Bridge, which is probably a more amazing sculpture than I could ever make. So,
Wow, what a presence.
I was right under it. And it's pretty dominating. And I was doing those sort of structural things. My MFA thesis was a sort of an architectural form that was like a large bowl-shaped thing where all the elements were exposed. And that's kind of what the bridge felt like living under. So I just sort of said, I'm just going to make drawings now. Because also, I was working pretty regularly. So to have a couple hours, when I got home, I could do a lot more drawings than I could make sculptures. The work could progress a lot faster. And, the more I did that, the more it just sort of sucked me in. And that was the end of that story.
When you look back at the drawings that you created before living under the Brooklyn Bridge, do you look back at them often?
Occasionally, yes.
And when you do, what do you see? What have you discovered?
I was searching. I was thinking very sculpturally. I was thinking of form and building things in a, on the two-dimensional surface that represented three dimensions. So I was thinking very classically. And I don't know if that was the academic training through school or just the way my mind was working at the time. I would start a drawing by kind of loosely sketching, and then a form would start to appear, and I would flesh it out and see where it took me. And, one drawing would lead to another. And these kind of, people call them science fictiony or biological, biomorphic, I don't know.
You can put lots of different labels on them.
Right.
I mean, they translate, and that's the beauty of them, aside from the aspect of drawing and the perfection.
Mm-hmm.
The forms allude to so many different things.
Yeah.
So imaginative. And
right.
What do you think was the breakthrough moment that led to what you are now known for?
That's a good question. I would have to say there really wasn't one. It was a slow evolution, and that's the way I like to work anyway. So, I've often said if I'm thinking week to week, month to month, it's almost like I'm working on the same drawing over and over.
Mm-hmm. But the density and the fluidity of the forms and the drawing developed over time.
Yeah, in the vocabulary and the language that I'm sort of using developed. And I've always had an interest in satellite imagery, topographic maps, and cellular imagery, microscopic things. It's kind of all those things and none of them at the same time. I like to think that they put you in a place where you're not quite sure where you are. It's familiar, but not at the same time. So you're sort of at a loss.
Well, they never get boring.
Great to hear.
Do you journal? Do you just sketch to play, to think, to get away from the intensity of the formal drawing?
Yes and no. They usually start that way anyway. I do have a sort of a language and a vocabulary that I fall back on, or that emerges whether I'm conscious of it or not. But it's a very meditative process, and I think of it very often as play the whole way through. And it's almost like a puzzle that's needing to be solved as I'm making it. So I might have an idea of where I want it to go at the beginning, but once it starts to take shape, now I'm reacting to what's happening on the page. It's this really slow development and reaction and figuring it out as I go. And I'll often work on many drawings at the same time. So I'll work on something for an hour or two, and I get stuck or get a little, get to a spot where I want to stop. And then I'll work on something different.
Well, that makes sense because you're changing up the pace.
Yeah.
If you're working on several at a time, each one has its own demand, but
right.
as you move from one to the other, it changes, your rhythm changes.
Yep.
What about body memory? I mean, I imagine you've done so many of these and you have so many forms. The hand must almost move itself.
Yeah, it's very, very much like calligraphy, I imagine. I've never done much calligraphy, but I think it's that really repetitive thing where your mind is right ahead, my brain is right ahead of where my pen is. It's kind of being in that moment all the time. And I know
I think of the precision and the meticulousness of the work. That's just astounding. How different is it for you to work in graphite versus the ink and the colors?
It's the tool. I mean, the tools are very different. The pens are kind of annoying to work with. I don't know if you're familiar with rapidograph pens. Mostly what I work with. And you have to be very careful with them, and they clog. And then, but I've kind of figured out how to work with them. But you also have to keep it moving. If you lift it up, it dries out pretty quickly. So it's always moving. And the graphite is it's more about tone and creating value and form that way.
So it moves on the paper differently too.
Yeah, it's very smooth and kind of luscious almost compared to dragging a metal tip across paper. It's this sort of seductive feeling that's almost like velvet.
Do you have a preference? A leaning?
No, I like to switch back and forth. I've been focusing more on the ink work just because I think color has become something that I'm fairly engaged with now, trying to figure it out. And so I feel like I'm just starting to figure out what I'm doing with color. Mixing different colors, so
you change it up in scale quite a bit too.
Yeah. The biggest ink works I can do are about 30x40. Just I can't find paper that's bigger than that I can work on. I have a very smooth surface these pens use. I also need to be able to reach it. And it's on the table.
I see, yeah.
And these pens don't work horizontally. No, they don't work vertically on the wall.
So you work flat?
Yeah, I work almost flat.
Even with the graphite, it's flat?
The graphite pieces, the larger ones, I can work on a wall. So normally I'll have a big panel on the wall that I can work on. That's nice because I can stand up for a little while and work on a drawing, sit down and work on a drawing, so I can kind of physically break it up. Sitting at a drawing table for hours and hours can get a little tough.
Yeah. Well, they're magical and astounding, and I could go on and on and on.
Thanks.
Well, how would you, you pretty much mentioned how you work, but I'm always interested in what distinguishes one studio from the other, from another, and a lot of it has to do with your own personal style of being and Some are fastidious and there's stuff all over the place, and others you can't even walk in.
I will send you a photograph.
I imagine yours to be quite meticulous as well.
No, really? It's cluttered.
Uh-huh.
I actually share it with my wife. It was originally her space. It's a basement.
I see.
It's a basement studio.
Uh-huh.
That's divided into three separate spaces, and I share it with two other artists. She doesn't get in there very much these days because she's very busy with her job and raising the boy. But we had separate studios until he was born, and then it just didn't make a lot of sense to maintain two studios because we knew we'd only one of us be able to be in there at a time. So economically, it made sense to consolidate, and hers was super, so we went with hers. So all my stuff got moved into hers along with all her stuff. So it's the walls are packed with shelves, and I have two kind of blank-ish walls that I can work on, and then a table. And the ceiling's fairly low, so you know it feels sort of like a bit of a grotto. But it works for me. I put my head down, and I'm focused on the table or on the wall, and I don't need tons of space around me.
Do you have good light?
No, no natural light at all.
Oh, that's really hard.
It's a little tough.
How do you manage that with color? Lordy.
Yeah, you know, I figured out the lighting and artificial lights that work well enough. It's not ideal. But
talk to me about studio visits. Do you do many?
I do a few here and there. Not a ton, but, you know, I have other artists over and creators when they can. My dealers come when they're in town.
If you were talking to a graduate student, what would you advise them about studio visits?
Do as many as you can. Then with other artists, you know, invite whoever is willing to come to a studio. It's great practice. Talk about your work and to have the work in front of you in progress. I mean, there's nothing like it. Really. It's nice to have a show up and talk about the work in that context too, but I think the studio is much more informal. You get a side of the artist. I think that's more, I don't know, maybe more in depth. But yeah, I think it's really, really important thing to do. Be able to talk about your work.
And then how about artist residencies? Have you done any?
I've done one.
Really?
Yes.
Just one? Just how long ago was that?
Oh, I think it was 2007.
Uh-huh.
I think it's the best residency that there is. I did Civitella Ranieri's.
Okay.
In Umbria, in Italy. Yeah, it's an old 14th century castle or 15th century castle, and they have it divided up so you have a room, big room, and they have studios, and it's 6 weeks. And it was great. You know, they had a couple cars there. You could drive around and visit all the old towns around there. Went to Florence. People go to Rome. And the cooking and food was to die for. So
how
I was very spoiled by that.
How did it affect your work?
You know, I'm not sure. I brought a stack of small work to work on. And I did. I try to do a drawing every couple days. So that I wasn't trying to work anything large. I think it changed a little bit. It's hard to pin down because I didn't exactly change my approach to the work. So, you know,
were you with other artists or were you alone?
Yeah, there was three other artists and three musicians and some writers. A group of about 10 artists. It was also pretty amazing.
If your circumstances were different, would you do other residencies?
Yes, I probably would.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I was supposed to do a visiting artist at the Vermont Studio Center this spring, actually, but that was put off. But, yeah, you know, it was when the boy came along and my wife's been working pretty hard, it just sort of felt strange to take off. I'm going on a residency, have fun working all day and taking care of our kids.
Yeah, I mean, I understand. That would be I mean, that would be very difficult.
Yeah, so, you know, it would be nice to find some summer things like bring the family. That's, and that would be probably the way to do it.
Do you have a circle of other professionals, art professionals that you hang with?
Yeah, there's a few.
Share studio time and that kind of thing?
A little bit, yeah. I shared the studio in Dumbo with a couple of artists, Rafael Vargas Suarez.
Oh, yeah.
We shared a space for about 3 years. That was great.
He's at Anderson Ranch, isn't he?
No.
Oh, I must have the wrong Suarez.
Yeah, you have to. He goes by VSU, Vargas Suarez Universal.
Oh, no. Then I have the wrong one. Wrong guy. Yeah.
Interesting artist. You know, but a lot of my friends have moved out of the city. Now I have the kid, and that keeps me busy. A lot of our friends are now kids' parents.
Yeah. Well, and you're pretty settled, right, and comfortable.
Yeah.
In your patterns of living on a day to day. Are you teaching? Do you do any teaching?
I am not. No.
Uh-huh. Have you ever done any teaching?
I taught in grad school.
Uh-huh.
It was a nice program. We all taught one class each semester, and it was a 3-year program. So that's the teaching experience I have, and it was good. I taught drawing and I taught sculpture, and I much preferred teaching drawing.
And how long were you doing that?
That was a 3-year program. Mm-hmm. in grad school.
I see.
So we got a TA and gave us a tuition waiver.
So what's happening with the work now? Where is it going?
It's plodding along, yeah. I mean, I can't work. I mean, at this moment, because of being stuck at home, I'm doing medium and small work. And it's getting more and more dense, which is interesting and problematic because it's a lot longer.
You mean the process is more arduous?
Yeah, so now I'm
oh, but the dense thing. Pieces are so magnificent.
Yeah, that's where they need to be. So that's what I'm doing.
Especially, I mean, the small, dense ones are exquisite, I think.
Thanks, yeah. You were saying that they seem very precise to you. And that's, I'm glad to hear you say that, but I also have to say that's a bit of an illusion.
Well, I don't mean to say.
No, I mean, I appreciate.
Your work moves me emotionally.
Huh.
I can see perfectly rendered drawings that are meticulously rendered, and I have no feeling for them whatsoever because there's too much precision.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yours are finessed so magnificently,
well,
but
yeah,
there is a freedom within them,
but
there is a control
it.
Of the line.
Yeah, that's where I was going.
That makes sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what I'm doing. I'm exploring in that sort of most basic sense of the word. I'm figuring it out as I go. I mean, obviously, I've got all these kind of patterns and things that I can use, but it's always a matter of tweaking them and injecting something that's going to force them somewhere else. I like to think that they're a series of mistakes that I'm sort of building on and finding the ones that work.
I think that's a really important statement about mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
I talk to students about this all the time.
Right.
It's almost as though I need a mistake as a viewer.
Mm-hmm.
I need a mistake sort of metaphorically in a piece to keep me in it and keep me engaged. I look for those moments that confound the brain that won't let me get too set in a pattern, in a rhythm.
Right.
And so I think that statement is really important. And I like that you are comfortable using the word mistake.
I think if you're in a place that's not familiar, what else is there? I mean, you're kind of crawling around in the dark, so it's that's what you have. You have an exploration, which is heading off into wherever.
And you'd be in trouble if for every mistake you made, you had to throw it away and start all over again.
Well, that's the beauty of it, I think, is that I'm just building on it. Okay, at that thing that happened that I wasn't intending, now I'm going to exaggerate that and build on it. But there it is. And that's kind of the one rule I have with the ink, is that I have to sort of work with whatever happens.
And you have to make it work. Yeah.
So once it's there, there's no obscuring it. It just has to become part of the whole thing. And, you know, and so it becomes a matter of figuring out how to adjust as it's going along.
How are you dealing with this digital age?
Oh,
I mean, your work,
you're
fortunate, your work translates okay.
Yeah.
Over the internet?
They're okay.
You can't pick up the fine detail.
No, you can show detail shots, which
not the ideal. But
kind of capture. Yeah, I don't like it very much. It's not the way I look at work. But, you know, it is what it is. It's opened up some things. I wouldn't have Google Earth without it, which is one of my favorite.
Oh, I get that's fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you have a lot of imagery around the studio? Do you cut out things?
I have a pile of books that I kind of fall back on, and I use mm-hmm. Google Earth quite a bit. Some of my drawings I've used imagery from Google Earth. I'll project it and do some tracings, mm-hmm. and then that becomes sort of the skeleton that I'm building the drawing off of. So I'm diving into that a little bit and trying to figure out how much I want that actual subject matter to come through, how much mm-hmm. I want to be buried. I find them more successful when it's buried a little more, so it's not quite recognizable.
Do you find they merge, too, the different subject matters?
Yeah.
I mean, if you're looking at science and you're looking at astrology and you're looking at whatever, that they overlap?
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of what I'm doing anyway. Mm-hmm. It's like a soup almost. All these things mm-hmm. in there. And I'm trying to find a place with none of those things, but it sort of feels like all of them, I guess. I don't know.
Did you see a lot of imagery like that from your dad, from his work?
You know, what he does is a lot of math. So that's a language. And then, you know, I did visit his lab once. And they have a lab in Brookhaven on Long Island that we went out one Thanksgiving while they were running an experiment. And it's machines, you know. He's an accelerator, so they have magnets. You know, at the end there's a target, and there's all these computers and cables, mm-hmm. and it's just kind of a warehouse full of machines. And then, you know, the targets, when you see them, they're pretty interesting to look at. There's mm-hmm. spirally patterns of particle decay and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's just totally fascinating to me. It's one aspect of science imagery that I like. I like a lot of the other things too, a lot of the biology, geology. The University of Connecticut had a pretty decent geology department, and actually UMass did too. And they have these really incredible maps, like multicolor maps of geologic formations. But that's, you know, that's partly in there, you know, all the microscopic stuff.
You must pull some from nature too, don't you?
Oh yeah, yeah. There's a lot of that.
I think about moss on rocks.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's a real study.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Unlimited.
Yeah. No, it really is. It just goes on and on. I mean, Google Earth is just, you could get lost in it just forever.
Have you done any? Yeah.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I've done a series of graphite drawings using some of the river formations in the Amazon.
Oh.
And they're really interesting because the river will change its course and then it leaves this sort of oxbow behind. And you can see those kind of meandering through the forest. They're really hard to capture in a drawing, but it's just really incredible to see the satellite imagery.
I wonder if I saw an image of one of your works when I was doing some research, and it's not like anything I've seen before, where the line broke the edge of the paper, the form, almost like a fringe off the top and off the bottom. When did you start doing that? Because I've never seen that.
That might have
firsthand.
I remember that drawing. I think it was in my last show at Parody. I think that that's sort of a one-off almost.
Do you have it?
You
probably sold that.
I think it sold. Yeah. Yes, I believe it did.
Well, I went crazy when I saw that.
Yeah,
I thought it was just fantastic.
Yeah.
So when you're talking about the Amazon, that's where my head went.
Yeah, that
because that looked like a wandering river somehow.
Right, that certainly those forms came from that.
So why is that a one-off?
Well, that going off of the edge like that.
Yeah.
For that drawing, it's just sort of it seemed to need that almost. But I like it, and I'll figure something else out. You know, the way I generally work, especially with the ink, is to start sort of somewhere, and it's a form that grows, or a number of forms that kind of grow and merge into each other. At a certain point, it clicks as a form on the page, or it doesn't. So if it clicks, then it's a sort of a thing floating on a white space. Almost like a specimen on a slide or isolated form for study, something like that. If it doesn't click, then I kind of it just goes off the edge and it becomes like a map or a landscape. So that's sort of the two modes that the ink drawings take. And that drawing that you're referring to, I think I had formed an edge that I was kind of working in from and out towards. It just seemed to make sense that, you know, it was sort of artificial rectangle anyway, so we might as well break it. But, you know.
I think it's stunning. I just love how it breaks the surface. That took me to a whole other place.
Oh, that's great.
So I'll have to watch for more of those to appear on the scene.
Yeah, I will.
Put in my request.
Okay, for sure.
No, I really thought it was, it made the form that much more alive for me.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Like
it just
blue and a green.
It just took me to a lot of different places. It was gorgeous.
Yeah, it's a fun one.
What do you think is the most important thing for an emerging artist to understand that's not written in the pedagogy?
I think you have to have a kernel of need to do it, and you have to be able to access that, and that's probably nothing that, you know, nobody said. It probably is in the pedagogy, but I really think that's the most important thing. You have to be able to always find that reason that got you there in the first place, and that will change, but you have to keep in touch with that, because it'll, you know, your life and your struggles will throw a lot of stuff at you, and you have to really hold on to that thing that makes you want to do it.
So that has to be the source of energy and nurturing and...
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, that's going to be different for everybody, of course.
Mm-hmm.
For me, it's this kind of process and finding these forms of things. For someone else, it's a whole other reason to make art. So.
Are you tempted to go back to sculpture or painting?
I'm actually a little tempted to paint. I did a little in grad school, and I enjoyed it. But it's this whole other thing that it's going to take me decades to figure out. So it's always kind of in the back of my head. And sculpture, I did one piece, it was 4 or 5 years ago. I kind of remade my thesis piece from grad school, but kind of had some problems with the original, and I wanted to sort of figure some things out with it. So I revisited that, and I had an opportunity to work in the gallery during the summer, so I was able to sort of have the space to do it. It became this big installation. But
do you do triptychs? Or I don't think I've ever even seen those.
No,
I've only ever seen single works.
Yeah, the larger work could be that way. I have done a few. I did a diptych once. Didn't make a whole lot of sense.
Mm-hmm.
I needed to for a project for the MTA. They were made in laminated glass. There were four panels in a composition that was separated, so each panel had to be held. So there's a vertical element that's separated. For one of them, I had a drawing that I'd already done that seemed to work for what I wanted to do, so I had to sort of extend that. So I turned that into a diptych. But I really like to work. I like the page.
You like the edges.
One thing that I have to focus on and figure out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe at some point I'll.
Well, maybe the containment is what inspires you to keep the movement going.
Yeah, I think that's exactly it.
Yeah.
This sort of back and forth, this restriction, finding ways to work with that.
Well, this has been fantastic. I feel like I've visited your drawings without even being there, because I can imagine them. But I'm always interested in how different artists work and and how you, what's in your DNA and all of that. You know, I think of all the drawings that I have in the collection. Each one to me is a portrait of the artist.
Yeah.
You know, if they're abstract, but it just. When I look at them, when I see them in an exhibition, it's like revisiting my friends. I know this work, and I know you have a sense of the person behind it.
Right.
And it's pretty special. Well, I'll continue to follow your work very closely.
Great.
I feel very fortunate to have some of it in the collection.
I am very happy that it's in the collection.
And it's great for students to have.
Mm-hmm.
Access to it. So
no, it's quite a thing for sure.
Well, I thank you for giving me
like
the time. No, there isn't. I have all kinds of theories I've developed about the value of drawing. And,
yeah.
I mean, that's why I asked you about journaling, because I go into a painter's studio and I ask to see some drawings, and when they tell me they don't draw, well, how about journals? No, I don't do that. I just paint. You know, my red flags go up because I just really believe putting pen to paper metaphorically in some way opens your mind. I mean, things come out of your head you don't even know are there.
Right.
So,
no, it really is like a meditation for me.
Yeah, I can imagine.
And so, you know, when you say journaling, I go to a place of, you know, sitting down and sort of thinking of it as a journal, but I suppose because I'm drawing for 7-8 hours a day, that's a constant journal.
I use that term, but
right.
It can be any form of you know, just spontaneity on the page.
Right.
And you know, journals can be just sheets of paper that you pile up over a period of a year.
Right.
But I think it's really important to allow yourself that freedom. And only drawing can do that.
Yeah, I really think that as well. And that's, you know, you asked about painting. And that's my trepidation with going into painting. Is when I painted, it was this sort of constant, I can go over that part again, I can fix that. You know, it's never just right. And then it becomes this muddy mess. And I'm sure over time I could learn how to handle that and how to paint. I really think there's nothing like making a mark, having it be there, and having that record there that has to stay. And
I agree.
You can't obscure it.
I have one last question for you, Danny. Is there a writing, a book that you would highly recommend as an essential for a library, to a graduate student?
There's a book that I kind of went back to. Lauren, you know Lauren Isley? trying to even, if I can even remember his, the title of it.
E-I-S-L-E-Y?
I think so, yeah. He's a naturalist, and, you know, he goes back pretty, not current.
Warren Isley, okay.
I wanna get the title of it.
Okay.
Warren Isley.
This is something you stumbled on.
1907. I picked it up almost randomly. It just looked kind of interesting, and I read it, and it just really grabbed me. And I've read it, a few times.
So it really has inspired you.
Yeah, it's The Immense Journey, I believe.
The Immense Journey?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's very approachable. You know, it's very readable.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like a science writer. It's mm-hmm. very, you know, readable language. If I had to pick one, I would say that's sort
cool.
Of,
I don't know of it and haven't heard of it, but
yeah,
I'll check it out.
It's kind of common knowledge, but I think the way he writes and describes nature and his relationship to it is just very striking.
Cool. Well, I want to say thank you.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
I'm going to, this recording will be in our files and
mm-hmm.
some of it will be on our website.
Okay.
I'm not sure how and when. And I do hope to eventually, and I will have a written transcription. The 45 minutes of a transcription is a lot.
Yeah.
I'll probably break it down and edit it to some of the essentials. And then I will make sure you get something. But it will take me some time to get it to you.
Oh, no. No
okay.
Worries.
All right.
I hope you can always
come after me. You know how to get in touch with me.
Yep. Yep. Mm-hmm.
But thank you very much.
You're
I hope you
welcome.
And your family continue to stay healthy and managed.
Yes. Thank
and,
you.
And I'll look forward to seeing your next show.
Yep, and I hope at some point when things are normal, we can meet in person next time you're in New York.
That would be great. I would hope for that too. Thank you so much. You be well. Bye.
Thank you. You too. Bye-bye.